so much for joining me today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, we're wishing you the best. We love to hear from you, so you can always get in touch at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we also love when you join us in person. We have so many classes and workshops. And, of course, nowadays, with the change of the ability to be in a particular place and that not even mattering anymore, we have so many classes online. And the classes that we give are CE certified, which means you get credits for them. If you have a license, such as a nurse, midwife, RD, acupuncturist, massage therapist, or nutritionist, and if you're not one of those things, then you can get a certification for taking the class, since the credits go towards a professional license. We also have workshops around the country and around the world. We're just getting back from our 2017 trip to actually live with shamanic healers in a very remote area of the island of Jamaica. And that was our 30th year of taking people there. That class is actually a registered class through the University of Bridgeport that others can join in on to get some college credit. And, of course, we have lots of walks where we identify edible and medicinal plants. So get in touch, and we'd love to hear from you. Today, we have a wonderful guest, Dr. Joseph Pizzorno. Dr. Pizzorno was appointed by President Clinton in 2000 to the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine Policy, and before that, by President Bush, to the Medicare Coverage Advisory Committee in 2002. Dr. Pizzorno is one of the world's leading authorities on science-based natural medicine, and he actually coined the term in 1978 while he was founding the premier naturopathic university in the United States, Bastyr University, and our own Dr. Eugene Zamperone, co-host here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, is an alumni of Bastyr. He led Bastyr, Dr. Pizzorno led Bastyr, to become the first fully accredited multidisciplinary university of natural medicine and the first school of its kind to receive research funding from the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Pizzorno is instrumental in Bastyr University receiving international recognition as the leading institution of science-based natural medicine. Dr. Pizzorno is also a prolific author of many top-selling books in natural health, including one I certainly would not live without, The Textbook of Natural Medicine. Any natural healthcare practitioner definitely has that on their shelf, and also the Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine. On today's show, we're so happy to announce that Dr. Pizzorno is releasing a new book already available on Amazon and other locations, and it is called The Toxin Solution, How Hidden Poisons in the Air, Water, Food, and Other Products Are Destroying Our Health and What We Can Do to Fix It. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Pizzorno.
Well, thank you for the invitation, and my wife, Laura, sends her warmest regards.
What a wonderful book that Laura wrote on bone health.
Thank you.
I actually got a whole bunch of copies that I pass along to the many women who have that issue. So tell her I said hello as well, and thank you.
I will. Thank you.
Now, you've been in this field so long, Dr. Pizzorno. What led you, let's go back in time, to even want to get into natural health?
Oh, so the history of how I got in this is a little unusual. So way back in 1970, I was working in conventional medicine research. As a matter of fact, I was working in the Department of Rheumatology at the University of Washington Medical School. And I thought my life path at that point would be to do medical research. And I've always loved science, and I thought applying science to help people become healthy seemed like a really smart thing to do. So while doing research, you know, working with research MDs and PhDs literally all over the country, trying to find a cure for the various forms of arthritis, you know, rheumatoid, osteo, and gout, an event happened that changed my life and actually changed the life of a lot of other people as well. So it turns out my college roommate, I went to Harvard Medical College in Southern California, my college roommate had suffered from juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, so she had swollen hands and knees since she was around 10 or 11 years old. So she'd gone to conventional medicine with no success, and then one day we were having dinner together. She said, well, my rheumatoid arthritis is cured. I said, what? She said, yes. I went to this naturopathic doctor, and he cured me. I said, what's a naturopathic doctor? Because, you know, the profession was pretty far gone at that point, so nobody really knew what naturopaths were. And he told me about him, so I said, okay, that's interesting. So I went to visit this fellow. I said, you know, this is an incurable disease. How'd you fix my friend? And he said, you're going to love this. And he said, well, I just detoxified her liver and taught her how to eat properly. I thought, well, that's weird. Number one is, what's the liver got to do with her hands being swollen? And number two, doesn't everybody's diet just be fine? Does it provide everything they need? So I had become a vegetarian during this period of time, more on spiritual reasons than anything else. And I saw a lot of changes go on in my body. So I had asked one of the MDs I was working with what these changes in my body mean from changing my diet. And he said, oh, they're just errors in your observation because diet doesn't affect you. Now, nowadays, of course, very few MDs would say anything of that nature. But at that time, that was kind of the gospel truth. So I asked the naturopath exactly the same questions. He went to his bookshelf, pulled conventional medical textbooks off his bookshelf, and showed me how my change in diet was altering my physiology, and that's what I was seeing. So I was just so impressed. I said, well, you know, I think I'll become a naturopathic doctor instead of a medical researcher. And therein lies a career which spans almost 50 years.
Well, thank you so much. And then, of course, you became so active in naturopathic medicine and really, you know, was instrumental in making Bastyr the school that it is recognized for today, which is really sort of the Harvard Association of Naturopathic Schools. And wonderful doctors are coming out of there.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you.
And so now this particular new book, which is going to be our focus for today, but there's so many topics that you are well-versed in. What made you choose this topic? And from reviewing this book, you have textbooks that are really focused for the professional audience. Mm-hmm. And this is fully vetted and really well-researched, but it's presented in a way that really anyone can understand it.
Oh, thank you. So since I've been in medicine for half a century now, first as a researcher, then student, then as a clinician, and starting Bastyr, I've had a chance to look at a lot of research, but I've also had a chance to see a lot of patients over the years. So when I first started practice way back in 1975, the typical reasons people were sick were because of, you know, not eating the right foods, they had nutritional deficiencies, or not exercising, or smoking too much. You know, smoking's decreased a lot now, but people smoked a lot back then, and it was pretty straightforward why people were sick and how to help them become healthy. And you might say that you help them become healthy by changing their active determinants of health. In other words, changing what they were doing. And so they ate better and got exercise, stopped smoking, they get better. But then it started to change, and I started noticing more and more, first off, a lot more chronic disease. So when I was in naturopathic medical school way back in the early 1970s, diabetes affected less than 1% of the population, and now it's 10 to 20 times more common. You know, it depends on what diagnostic criteria you use, but nobody argues with this. It's at least 10 times as common. Well, what happened? And so I started looking into it, and I started realizing that we've changed the passive determinants of health. And what I mean by that is, you know, the air we breathe, the water we drink, the food we eat, even if we try to choose the healthier choices, the health and beauty aids, the chemicals used in our house, the yard chemicals we use, you can see that word chemicals popping up. Turns out these foods now are in the air and everything is polluted. They're polluted with chemicals like pesticides and herbicides. They're polluted with metals like cadmium and arsenic. They're polluted with these chemicals that are called persistent organic pollutants that stay in our bodies for long periods of time. And then there's also chemicals that, while we can detoxify them pretty quickly, we keep exposing them to ourselves. So then I started diving into, okay, so we have a lot more diabetes now. We have a lot more chemicals exposure now. Is there any correlation? So I then started looking at the research and look at number of chronic diseases, but it turns out diabetes has by far the most data. So I dove really deeply into diabetes, and I found that there's a number of toxins that if you look at people with a top exposure, like people with top 20% exposure to the toxin, and compare their incidence of diabetes to those in the bottom 20% of exposure to the toxin, it turns out they have dramatically more diabetes. So then I started to say, well, if people with the highest exposure have more diabetes, do these toxins then cause diabetes?
Okay, wait, so let me backtrack on that. You found that the people with a higher level of exposure, or were you actually doing blood testing of levels and then found an association with diabetes?
So what I did was I looked at the medical research to see what had been published by scientists. So then we look at what's been published by scientists, it was very clear that the scientists were showing that high levels of these toxins were indeed induced in diabetes. And not only were they inducing the diabetes, but they also worked out the mechanism of action. So we know how it was happening, not just that it was happening.
And, you know, it's so interesting because you're so right. There's no doctor who will argue with you, Dr. Pizzorno, that the rate of diabetes is escalating, although sometimes they say things like because there's better testing with things like A1C. You know, they'll say that's why we're finding more, because we have better mechanisms of measurement, which is ridiculous.
Yes.
But it's not, and even in terms of people, I always tell patients, this is not something you catch. You're not just walking down the street and diabetes jumps at you. It actually is something that you really can be a determining factor in you coming down with it or not, even if it's present in your family. That's another big excuse. Well, it's, you know, genetic, when actually it's not, except that very often the same family eats similarly.
Right. Yeah, so that's a very good point. So looking at the diabetes, for example, and if you look at all chronic disease, only about 20% is due to genetics. All the rest is up to us. So when we're looking at the diabetes, and I started looking at the research on this, and we started looking at the mechanisms and what percent of diabetes was being due to these various toxins, and what we found was the primary cause of the diabetes epidemic is all these toxins we're being exposed to. So I brought this to the attention of a publisher and said, hey, I'd like to write a book about this because I think it's really important. And the publisher agreed and said, yes, this is really important. So I got a nice advance. I spent pretty much the whole advance on doing more research. But the research we found was what let me create the book, because the book shows how all these toxins are directly causing disease.
And the research is there supporting that claim. And it's really interesting, though, because in the pharmaceutical industry and in the pesticide industry, which, as you know, often is actually the same when we look a little behind the curtain, they're actually putting together a huge campaign to discredit the research that shows a link between high levels of pesticides and other toxins with disease.
It's very worrisome, because the research is very clear. And it's unfortunate that much of the research actually started outside the U.S. So the data showing how toxins are causing diabetes was actually really first discovered by a researcher, a woman by the name of Deki Lee in South Korea. And then people started duplicating her work. It's only been about the last 10 years that we've really gotten a good handle on how these toxins cause disease. And now that we've got that handle, it's really clear. It's a huge challenge.
It really is. And I'll tell you, I was the head nurse for Dr. Serafina Corsello.
Oh, nice.
I had the pleasure of knowing Dr. Corsello.
Right.
Sounds like you did know her, because she's not
a personality
that you would forget. Unfortunately,
no.
She has since died. But yes. I was her head nurse for about 20 years. And one of the things that I thought she was a real pioneer in is she actually had a lot of those studies. Like you said, they were done outside this country. But so many people come in, especially to seek out holistic care, very often when they've gone through conventional medicine, and people say, well, there's nothing wrong with you. Just take an antidepressant because you don't feel well. It's just ridiculous. It makes it worse. And she did testing poor organophosphates, heavy metal levels.
Wow.
And by detoxification, just like you're talking about in the book, and looking at the digestive system and the liver, really phenomenal cures, you know, 20 years. And do you know the Office of Professional Medical Conduct came in and removed her license because they said that she was doing fraudulent testing because she tested for these toxins?
Yeah, that's just tragic. But you have to realize this whole way of thinking about patients, about trying to help understand why they're sick because of nutritional deficiencies and toxicity and how to become healthy by taking care of those things, this whole way of thinking about patients has been so actively suppressed in this country and throughout the world. I mean, I think back to a number of my teachers when I was in school back in the early 70s. A number of my teachers have been arrested for having the gall to tell people, well, instead of taking this drug, why don't you eat right? You know, instead of smoking all the time, you know, why don't you go out and get some exercise, develop a healthy lifestyle. They were put in jail because of saying this to people.
Exactly. Unbelievable. But that's another reason that your work is so important, because of your work in the university system and even within government agencies, where you're putting out truthful information and evidence-based information.
Yes. So as you talk about my book, you mentioned, for example, some reason that the conventional people kind of try to dismiss this body of knowledge by saying, well, you know, there's not a lot of research support for it, or, you know, the diagnostic criteria have changed, or et cetera, et cetera. Well, so in the book, I was really careful when I showed the instance of diabetes. I showed using exactly the same diagnostic criteria. Okay, so this is not an artifact of more sensitivity. This is real in our society. I mean, you look at things like kidney failure. You know, kidney failure when I was in school was really rare. Now you've got dialysis centers all over the place. Well, what's going on? How about ADHD in children? We didn't have ADHD in children when I was in school. Now it's really common. We can go on. Fatty liver disease.
That's a worrisome situation because there's so many children. Who exactly is going to take care of them? Because many of them are quite disabled, and they, you know, how are they going to work and live and have their own situation? And, of course, a lot of it can be reversed through things like diet and chiropractic and, you know, rewiring the neurological pathways and, of course, getting the toxins out and decreasing the input of them.
Yes, exactly. So that's what the book is about. Basically, in the book, I say to people, first chapter, I say, okay, here's the toxins and here's how they're damaging your health. And the second chapter, I say, here's where they're coming from. Better stop, you know, stop the toxins coming in. No point in doing a detox program until you stop the toxins from coming in. And then I do something that's really quite different. I say, before we get into a detox program, you have to prepare your body for the detox. So you have to prepare your intestines so that they're stopping producing toxins in your body and helping eliminate toxins. You got to get your liver working properly so it's not so overloaded with the toxins and that all the nutrients necessary for the liver to detox properly are functioning. We make sure we clear out the bile so the bile's functioning, getting rid of toxins the way it's supposed to. And then we have to work on the kidneys. Again, so in the past, I didn't worry about the kidneys because it wasn't that common a problem, but now it's so much more common. So now we got to get the kidneys functioning properly. Now, after we've done all this, we can start doing a detox program because the body is ready.
I think that's very wise advice, because if you start doing detoxing, which, of course, all these chemicals, like they're very often lipophilic or lipophilic, and they hide out in the fat. And as you're doing a deep detox, you're actually increasing the level in the blood. And we often found that at Dr. Corsello's, because we would do heavy metal readings before we started. And then once we were well into the cleansing protocol, as you're discussing, and your book so clearly points out, first detoxing various systems in the body, well, it's kind of like you don't want to run a train right through if the tunnel is, you know, bricked up. You want to open the bricks and have a smooth path out for those toxins.
Right. Right on. Exactly.
the wonderful advice. Now, what other diseases did you find can be linked to various chemicals and toxins? You did discuss diabetes, which is probably a surprise to most of our listeners. They would be thinking that it's sugar that causes it.
Right. Yeah, so let me get going on that, too. So I want to be very clear to people. I'm not saying that if you avoid toxins, you can now start eating a lot of garbage food and sugar and such. Okay. So the original problems have not gone away. We just added an even bigger problem. So this is a huge challenge. You still have to live healthily. So when we then start looking at the various conditions, let's go back to diabetes and sugar question you just asked. So yes, sugar is not so good for us, but if you look at the correlation between the increasing consumption of sugar and the incidence of diabetes, you don't see a very good correlation. If you look for, and of course, correlation does not prove causation, but you would expect if the cause is there, there should be correlation. But then if you look at the correlation of the release of chemical toxins into the environment with diabetes, it's now very strong. So everybody knows that people who are obese have a lot more diabetes. But if you look at obese people in the bottom 10% of chemical exposure, they have no increased risk of diabetes. You hear what I just said?
Wow, so say it again. Not, that's an important
yes,
one.
It's an important one. So if they don't have a lot of toxins in their body, obese people have no increased risk for diabetes.
So the obesity link.
Actually,
a secondary and possibly more important link is the amount of toxins that a person is having, whether they're obese or not.
Exactly. It's the toxins that are doing it. So that's where we've got to really start focusing, is dealing with the real reasons why people are sick, because they're being sick because we're basically undermining our physiological functions. So going back to diabetes, I know I'm saying this many times, but to get the data is best there, that's why I'm talking about it. If you go back and look at diabetes, and you like start looking at, well, how do these chemical toxins cause diabetes? It turns out that things like phthalates and bisphenol A and such, they bind to the what are called insulin receptor sites on the cells, so that when the insulin tries to tell the cells to absorb more sugar, they can't. It's much harder to do because the insulin receptor sites are blocked. So what happens then, we have to overproduce insulin from the pancreas to then get the sugar into the cells. When you overwork the pancreas for 20, 30 years, well, it's going to break down and stop producing insulin, and now you got diabetes. So you're asking what other diseases to consider.
Well, you know what? What we'll do first, Dr. Bizzorno, okay, is take a break because it's time for a break. And when we come back, we will certainly look into a lot of the other information that you have in Dr. Pizzorno's new book. You want this book. You can find it at thetoxinsolution.com. Because, of course, Dr. Pizzorno is telling us where toxins come from, how they negatively affect our health. But most of all, we want a solution. So this book is The Toxin Solution, and the website is thetoxinsolution.com. You can look at it while we're on our break. And stand by, Dr. Pizzorno. You're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And you also can listen to our archived shows by phone, if you'd like, at 701-719-0884. Five different episodes or shows there. Also, all our shows are archived. I'll be sending Dr. Pizzorno a link of this archived show. They're archived on Progressive Radio Network, and we also have them at naturalnurse.com. So stand by. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-sized tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian, Q. curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. In 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity, and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
And welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we're so happy to bring you today our illustrious guest, Dr. Joseph Pizzorno, naturopathic physician, appointed by both President Clinton and also President Bush. We're nonpartisan here. We want health for everyone, to some major government organizations looking into natural medicine, and Dr. Pizzorno is the perfect person to review that information because he always is an authority on science-based natural medicine. So thank you so much for joining us today. We're discussing Dr. Pizzorno's new book, The Toxin Solution, How Hidden Poisons in the Air, Water, Food, and Products are destroying our health, and what we can do to fix it. So important. So thank you so much for being our guest today, Dr. Pizzorno.
Well, thank you for the invitation to join you.
Now, we talked about diabetes, and you went into that and assured us that there's a great deal of research, but what other discomforts or illnesses also have a pretty good guess that they are toxin-related as well?
So one area I was really surprised by was cancer. And the reason for that is, as I was, again, looking at all these various disease correlations, I noticed arsenic kept popping up. And going back just for a moment to diabetes, it turns out that arsenic actually damages the pancreas, so it can't produce as much insulin. So arsenic exposure is the problem. Then I started looking at other conditions. Sorry, a little early in the morning here for me. Okay.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're all the way over there on the Pacific Coast.
Right. So anyway, I started looking at other conditions, and cancer showed up a lot. So looking at lung cancer and pancreatic cancer and prostate cancer, and a lot of them are showing up. I was saying, wow, there's a lot of correlation between arsenic and these various cancers. Well, how often are people exposed to arsenic? And I was just stunned by what I found. So it turns out that, first off, only half of the water supplies have been tested for arsenic to begin with. And when we look at the public water supplies that have been tested, 10% of them have enough arsenic in them that they are known to actually increase the risk of disease. There was one study that was done in Italy where they had a region of the country that was somewhat isolated, but was interesting because they had really good records, and they had huge variation, 100-fold variation in the amount of arsenic in the water. So then they started looking at what were the kind of diseases we would see in the people who had the most arsenic. And it was cancer and heart disease and diabetes, and all these things were just substantially higher in the people with the arsenic exposure. So I started looking at the numbers in the U.S., trying to find people who also had exposure levels to arsenic in the range that this Italian study showed caused a lot of disease. And sure enough, there are a number of U.S. areas with really high levels of arsenic. And U.S. researchers have also started looking at this, and they're finding that indeed there are some areas of the country with very high levels of arsenic and have a lot more disease.
Yes. Now, I actually have reviewed even public data on the American Cancer Society site. And sometimes they're a little vague, but there's actually quite a bit of information there looking at the link between toxins and cancer. One in particular that I happened to be reviewing just the other day because of a slide deck I'm putting together was about Agent Orange and the fact that now, of course, the chemical companies are going to be adding one of the parts of Agent Orange to the glyphosates to continue to spray all the genetically modified food. So I was very surprised to be able to find right on the American Cancer Society's website data showing an association with increased cancer rate.
Wow. Well, you know, on the one hand, that's good to hear that other, you might say, more conventional organizations are starting to pay attention to this, because so many of these disease-centric organizations, at least in the past, have been focused around raising money to look for research on drugs. And I think people started to realize that drugs can only get you so far. You have to do the foundational things that are necessary for health.
Absolutely. You know, you don't want to wait till you get it, but the point is that at least they're honoring and recognizing some of the data you're presenting in your book, The Toxin Solution, about the fact that it's irrefutable that this stuff is not good for us. And yet they're promulgating, you know, to increase the genetic modification, increase the use of pesticides and herbicides and other toxins throughout the environment, like you brought up earlier in cosmetics and things that are called, you know, baby hand wipes or, you know, just prolifically.
Yes, it's everywhere. You look at health and beauty aids. So we put these things on our skin to, you know, keep us pretty. And that's great, but if you look at what's actually in the health and beauty aids, you have things like phthalates. And the phthalates are in there because they solubilize the fragrances and stabilize them. Well, that's fine because it makes the product work better. But these phthalates, they poison our insulin receptor sites as well as doing all kinds of other problems, cause other kinds of problems in our body as well.
Yeah, and like you said, this is documented. So why doesn't everyone's doctor tell them about this when there is so much data?
So I think there's two reasons. One is the data itself. I think one reason why the research community was slow in coming to grips with this is that most toxins are researched for a relatively short period of time and in isolation. So, for example, you look at just one toxin all by itself, well, it may not look too bad, particularly if you don't follow people for very long. But we've done something different now. What we've done is we've exposed the whole population to tons of toxins. Well, tons, let me be explicit. There are about 75 toxins we're exposed to at high enough dosages to be known to increase disease. So now we have these toxins. We're exposing people to a lot of them, and we're exposing them for their whole life. So when you expose people to their whole life to these toxins, while one individual toxin may not be too much of a problem, you know, add them up together, and you get much, much more disease
problems. Well, besides the additive effect, Dr. Pizzorno, and I just want to remind our listeners, you are listening to a very important person, Dr. Joseph Pizzorno, who is a real leader in the natural products arena, both from an educational perspective and from a government policy perspective. So we're very happy to have him on. And he just came out with a new book, which is great, The Toxin Solution. And that's what we're talking about, where he's telling us how these toxins affect our health and, more importantly, really what you personally can do about it. Now, you were talking about the fact, Dr. Pizzorno, that, of course, there's a range of these toxins, and you're talking about the fact that there definitely are several in everyone's system, and then over time, or when you have a particular weakness, genetic or a life event or extra stress, that it can do more damage. But another thing is the recombinant nature of these chemicals. So not only are you having an additive effect of chemical X and chemical Y, but they are joining together many times in unknown ways and really creating chemical Z, which we don't even know what it does.
Yes, very good point. And there's another big issue, and of course, is all this autoimmune disease we're experiencing now as well. So, you know, when we're in utero, when we're in our moms, our body, the immune system, becomes aware of what are our normal tissues to make sure we don't try to develop antibodies to our normal tissues. And that's how we protect ourselves. So the immune system knows when something doesn't belong to us because they look at the proteins in it and they say, well, that's different, so therefore we have to get rid of it. But what happens when you have a normal protein in the body that the immune system thinks is okay, but now you add to it a chemical toxin that changes the physical form of the protein? Now all of a sudden you've got something the body says, oh, wait, that's new. I better develop an antibody to it. And so now you start developing antibodies to your own normal tissues.
Right, which, of course, leads to the all-important inflammatory response that we see linked to all autoimmune disease and really all disease processes of every kind, as you mentioned, including diabetes, cancer. But, you know, the thing is, this sounds pretty dire, and it really is, particularly when we look at why isn't the government doing more to stop toxins from being released into the environment.
Right.
And as we know, unfortunately, with the EPA being gutted, that's going now in the opposite direction.
It's worrisome. So we look at the EPA. My concern with the EPA is they're not paying enough attention to the real reasons why people are sick, which is the environmental pollution. So I would ask the EPA, why are you allowing so much arsenic in our water supply? Why are you allowing synthetic fertilizers that were called high phosphate fertilizers to have high levels of cadmium in it to poison our food? You know, why are you allowing these plasticizers in these food packaging materials that we know leak right into the body? How about bisphenol A in canned foods and plastic bottles? Why are you allowing the bisphenol A to be put in those things? So I know some people are concerned about global warming and things like this, and those, of course, are reasons to be concerned. But how about these things which are every day affecting us right now? Not potential problem in the future. We're talking about right now. These things are poisoning people's bodies.
It's so true and so obvious. So what's wonderful, though, is in your book, so what we can do, are we going to sit around and wait for the government to make changes, because guess what? At this present moment, it's going in the other direction, as
right,
we know.
Right.
The EPA, whatever little regulation they're doing, is being reversed. So, you know, that's not going to be so helpful. I don't think we should wait and rely on that. But really, your book is more about taking personal responsibility to wake up, know these things are around us, and really, you can do a lot to decrease the amount that you personally are using. Like, for instance, if I walk into my refrigerator and open it, there's like nothing that's been packaged. I go to organic farms and I grow food. I even know who grew it. And that's
right,
all that's in there. So there are still environmental toxins that are going to get into that, but it's a lot less than in packaged food. If I go in my bathroom, I have two bottles of soap, like the Dr. Bronner's, the tea tree oil one and the peppermint. That's it. You can use that for shampoo. For skincare, I use coconut oil, pure organic coconut oil, nothing with paragraphs of chemicals on it. So it's really not that hard once you decide that you're important enough to make these changes.
Yes, exactly right. This is under our control. We don't need government. We don't need others to tell us what we should do and should not do.
Right. I mean, it would be great because, first of all, if you take care of yourself and you eat healthy, especially as you age, as we know, you still have energy to maybe work towards more government regulation of toxins. But in the meantime, using your book, you tell people exactly what to do to actually move away. How can I live a low-toxin life?
Exactly.
So what would be your answer to that with, for your patients?
So the first step is don't let the toxins in. And that means looking at everything that comes into your house, into your body, and making choices. Now, we can't avoid all the toxins because, you know, I choose to live in Seattle, and if you live in the city, you're going to get, you know, the particulate matter from burning diesel, and you're going to get benzene because of pumping gasoline. So it's, you can't avoid everything, but you can avoid a lot. So let's start with food. If you eat organically grown food, you're going to have less toxins than if you eat conventionally grown foods. There was a study done here in Seattle where they looked at organophosphate levels in children. Now, the reason for that, of course, is organophosphates poison neurological systems. And we know that kids with higher levels of organophosphates have more ADHD, and it also looks like they may have less IQ as well. That research is now evolving. So where do organophosphates come from? So a study done here in Seattle, they measured children coming from a health food store and comparing the children coming from a conventionally grown store, food with conventional grown foods, and they looked at the organophosphate levels in their blood and urine. And the kids eating conventionally grown foods had 9 times higher levels of organophosphate pesticides just by eating conventional foods rather than organic foods. Then another thing you can do is look at how you get foods if they're pre-made. Well, if you get pre-made foods that are in cans, the cans are lined in plastic that leaks bisphenol A into the food. So if you are going to use prepared foods rather than choosing canned foods, and again, it doesn't matter whether it's organic or conventionally grown foods. If they're in a can, they're going to get bisphenol A. So what we can do is get frozen foods instead. Then what happens to the food when you get home with it? So let's say you buy some fresh fish. Well, do you come home and put it in a plastic container as it defrosts in the refrigerator? Well, no, because that puts the toxins in. So all these food storage containers in your home should be made out of glass. And if you look pretty carefully, you can also find even glass lids. So now we're decreasing exposure that way. Health and beauty aids. There's a really cool app I mentioned in my book called Think Dirty. So you got your smartphone and you take a little picture of the barcode on the side of the container, and it'll tell you what toxins are in that and how toxic they are. And the good news is that there are a lot of food, there are a lot of these health and beauty aids that are really low toxin. We went through our own house and we started looking at all the things we're using, the shampoo and the conditioner and the soap and all these kinds of things. And even in our house, where we're really conscious of this, we threw out 3/4 of the things that were in our house. Because after I wrote my book, we said, okay, apply all this stuff to ourselves as well. And so we got rid of all those toxins.
So that's the personal action that you took. And what we're going to do right now is take another little break right here on Progressive Radio Network. And when we come back, Dr. Pizzorno, I do want to investigate all the fantastic parts of your book that are really how-to, like how to do a detox, how
Great.
To reverse some of this toxic load. And what's so wonderful that doing all of these things just makes you feel better overall. And it's amazing how quickly that happens once you make that commitment to yourself. So we're going to take a little break right here on Progressive Radio Network. You can always find us at prn.fm, also naturalnurse.com and Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we're talking with Dr. Joseph Pizzorno and about his book, The Toxin Solution. And that's where you can find the book, thetoxinsolution.com, or, of course, Amazon or any other bookseller. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
This is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food, and you're listening to PRN, your source for progressive, up-to-date, and inspirational information on nutrition and health.
Hi, I'm David Crowe, host of The Infectious Myths, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time here on PRN.FM. I love science the way it should be practiced, but a lot of modern science is corrupted by financial interests and serves a master other than the public good. Myths continue to be constructed around viruses, vaccines, forensics, and pharmaceutical drugs. People are dying and ending up in jail because of them. Listen to me as I deconstruct the myths that those who call themselves scientists weave, or when I wander into social and political topics. If you're new to the show, check out our past episodes at infectiousmyth.podbean.com.
Love, lust, and laughter. Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, a board-certified sex therapist and a marriage and family therapist. Guests, colleagues, authors are interviewed, and we sometimes dispense advice to create a format that is both informative and entertaining. If you can't listen live, go to the archives and even rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope that you are coming with us.
Progressive Radio Network. The Thinking Person Station.
Thank you so much for joining us once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can find us at naturalnurse.com. You can take any of our classes. Go to naturalnurse.com and look at calendar. We have several this week coming up online. So whether you're in Seattle over there in the West Coast where our guest Dr. Pizzorno is, or on the East Coast in Florida where I am, or the New York area, and we have lots of on-ground classes all over the country as well. So check that out at naturalnurse.com calendar. You can always look at our books. Dr. Zamperone and myself have written several books, and you can look at that, naturalnurse.com books. And today we are talking with Dr. Joseph Pizzorno about his newest offering to the public with tons of information. I think it's a good book for you to take with you to your doctor, because it, every single thing that he talks about in this book is referenced. And I think a wonderful part, Dr. Pizzorno, and welcome back, is the protocol summary, where you're really laying out what people can do, like week one and two, exactly how to start this detoxification procedure to get out these chemicals, and like you said, becoming conscious about stopping the input of them.
Yes, I think it's really important. You've got to stop the chemicals coming in, because while there are ways we can get rid of them, if you keep on letting them into your body, well, you're going to keep on making yourself more and more toxic. So we talked about how you avoid the toxins coming into your body. Then the next step is, of course, helping your body become prepared for getting detoxification. The place I like to start is the gut. One of my teachers way back in the early 1970s started our class with a very provocative statement. He said, disease begins in the gut. And I thought, well, that's kind of a strange statement. But, of course, those old-timers were right on. And as I started looking at more and more research, it was very clear that, indeed, that when we've got a gut which has the wrong kind of bacteria in it, when we're eating foods that we're allergic to, or when we're taking many over-the-counter drugs such as non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, what we're doing is we're actually damaging our gut. And when we damage our gut, it does a number of things. One, it causes inflammation, which, of course, is going to give us all kinds of intestinal problems. But equally important is it causes the gut to lose control over permeability. And what we mean by that is that our gut very intentionally opens up the space between the cells very regularly to sample what's in the gut. So kind of intentionally let just a little bit into the body to see what's there so our immune system can react if there's an infectious bacteria there. But unfortunately, when we're consuming non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or having the wrong bacteria in our gut or eating foods we're allergic to, we cause damage to the gut, so we can't control what comes in, and we get something that's called leaky gut. So even though some people think, well, leaky gut, that's not a valid concept, well, it is a valid concept. The research is very clear. So now we have a leaky gut. Not only is it allowing these toxins into the body, like food and bacteria that don't belong and they cause immunological reactions, but they all have to go to the liver first. So now we're overloading our liver, taking care of the stuff coming from the gut that the liver should not have to be taken care of. So first thing you want to do is clean up the gut. And we do that by making sure people have the right bacteria in their gut, they're avoiding foods they're allergic to, and that they're not taking non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. So the ibuprofen and the aspirin and Tylenol, even though it's not strictly a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, Tylenol is really hard on the gut, as well as the kidneys, by the way. So we get the gut working properly. Another fact we do with the gut is we increase people's consumption of fiber. And the reason that's important is that not only does the fiber improve the growth of the healthy bacteria in the gut, but when our livers are dumping toxins into the gut, our liver is expecting there to be fiber there to take the toxins out of our body and into our stools. Well, the problem we have in our modern civilization is that our liver evolved expecting there to be between 100 and 150 grams of fiber in our diet every day. Now the average person consumes only 15 to 20 grams of fiber a day. So what's happening there is that we're actually undermining a key mechanism by which our body tries to get rid of this stuff.
Yeah, and so, how about when people tell me, oh, I'm getting fiber, I'm eating my, my whole grain bagel.
Right. Well, you know, a whole grain bagel is going to be better than a white grain bagel, but still that's only a very small amount of what we need to be healthy.
Exactly. And also, it still has gluten. I would say a better choice might be more fibrous vegetables.
Yes. Thank you for making that clarification. So as I say in my book, one of the things I always tell people to do during this period of time is stop eating wheat. And the reason for that is I found that over half of my patients with chronic disease, if I did nothing more than tell them to stop eating wheat, of course, I'm saying eat, replace with healthy foods, but you got to stop eating the wheat, because for over half the population, every time they eat wheat, they increase their gut permeability. So wheat's very, very important to stop for at least this period of time until you're sure it's not a problem for you.
Wow. Well, I'm getting a little heads up here from my engineer that it looks like we're getting ready to wrap up the show. I want to thank you so much for being here. There's so much more to talk about, Dr. Pizzorno. Going to have to contact your scheduled person, and we'll have you on another show because we do three different shows. You're talking about allergies, thyroid health, women's health, men's health, infertility, energy, of course, even how these toxins are affecting our animal compadres on the planet, such as dolphins. So thank you for writing this comprehensive, well-researched, evidence-based book that has so much information. What are some parting thoughts?
So a parting thought is our bodies have a remarkable ability to heal if we just give them a chance. And giving them a chance means getting into our body all the nutrients we need and avoiding and getting out of our body all the toxins we don't need. I mean, in many ways, medicine is simple. I'm quoting my dear friend, Dr. Sid Baker. He said, it's really simple. We each have unique needs for nutrients. Get them into the body. We each have unique susceptibilities to environmental toxins. Keep them out of the body. If you do that, it just dramatically improves health.
So what is one case study where you saw a tremendous change by someone taking your advice?
Oh, great, great example. So for the book, I wrote up 35 case histories, although I think only about 20 of them ended up in the book. And so I gave people examples of what happens when you clean yourself up. And there's just so many examples. Probably the best one, though, was a woman with a 67-year-old woman. She was having early signs of dementia, brain fog, loss of memory. Her hair was falling out. Her skin was bad. Tested her for mercury. She had huge amounts of mercury in her body. So then I put them on a protocol, which I describe in the book, where we give her, basically, we make sure we get rid of the sources of mercury, and then we put her on high fiber. We give her N-acetylcysteine, which increases glutathione production in the body, which is really important to get rid of mercury. Now, for her, because her levels were so high, I gave her a very low toxic drug called DMSA, and then we treated her. It took 18 months. Okay, I want to be clear with people here. When you're detoxifying, you have to do it at a rate at which your body can accept, because if you break these toxins loose faster than you can get rid of them, they can cause more damage. So we put on this very effective but relatively gentle program, and we tested her mercury every 6 months. It went from 51 to 17 to 7 to 3.5. And 3.5 was where that's really low mercury at that point. And when she got there, all her symptoms were gone. No more dementia. Her hair was good. She could, you know, had no worries about talking to her friends. She would be forgetting things. It was just remarkable.
Isn't that why you became a doctor, to see people get better? And unfortunately, so many of our compatriots in conventional medicine, they seem to not have that joy in life, in their work, because they often do not really see people get better just by taking pharmaceutical drugs. But this actually creates wellness. It's so exciting. Thank you so much for putting this great book together, The Toxin Solution. Listeners, you can find Dr. Pizzorno at drpizzorno.com. That's drpizzorno.com. Or for the book, thetoxinsolution.com. Thank you so much for being our guest today. And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, your host, right here on Progressive Radio Network. And you can find us at naturalnurse.com and Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, we're hoping that you stay healthy.